This is Samuel Larson, returning with the News Gazette, dated June 25th, 2020. We continue now on the death notices on page B3. Mary Lee Cassio, Ogden. Mary Lee Cassio, 80, of Ogden, died Tuesday, June 16th, 2020, at OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center, Urbana. A celebration of life service will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Sunday at Mitchell Cassio's home, 3209 North 1400 East Road, Mansfield, Illinois, 61854. Freese Funeral Home, 302 East Grand Avenue, Street Joseph, is in charge of arrangements. Elisa Rose Hoffman, Clinton. Elisa Rose Hoffman, 61, of Clinton, formerly of Havana, Illinois, died at 6:50 p.m., Tuesday, June 23, 2020, at home. No services are planned at this time. The family entrusted Calvert Funeral Home, 201 Street, South Center Street, Clinton, with cremation rights. Bob Lee Logsden, Rantoul. Bob Lee Logsden, 72, of Rantoul, joined his wife in heaven in the early morning hours of Wednesday, June 24, 2020, at OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center, Urbana. There will be a memorial service on 11 a.m. on Wednesday, June 1st, 2020, at Lux Memorial Chapel, 1551 East Grove Avenue, Rantoul. John Stanley Marshall. John Stanley Stan Marshall of Chicago, formerly of Champaign, was born into eternity on Saturday, June 20th, 2020. Family-only funeral will be Friday in Chicago. Public viewing will be Saturday, June 27th, at Bethel AME Church, 401 East Park Street, Champaign, from 10 to 11 a.m. Burial will be at 11:30 a.m. at Lincoln Ceremony. Patricia Moore, Champaign. Patricia L. Gunning Moore, 58, of Champaign, passed away at 11:49 a.m. Friday, June 19, 2020, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Cremation rites will be accorded and private family services will be held. Blurton Funeral Home in Hoopston is assisting the family with the arrangements. Condolences may be sent to the family on Patty's Everlasting Memorial page at www.blurtonfuneralhomes.com. David Norton, Monticello. David William Norton, 57, of Colchester, passed away at 8:31 p.m. Thursday, June 18, 2020. In McDonough District Hospital, Macomb. Private family service will be held. Interment will be held in Ingram Cemetery, White Heath. Condolences may be sent to the family at www.mackiewrightfuneralhome.com. Forced into a corner, former Illini coach fights back. Opinion, Jim Day. Sometimes the best defense is a good offense, and no one knows that better than former Illini and current Kansas University basketball coach, Bill Self. That's why Self, under withering attack by NCAA investigators and connection with alleged recruiting violations, recently decided to return fire. It came in the form of a threat against the NCAA by Self's lawyer. The purpose of this letter is to formally put the NCAA on notice of Mr. Self's current and prospective claims against the NCAA relating to the NCAA's infractions investigation of the KU men's basketball program. And Mr. Self, he is considering bringing legal action against the NCAA and NCAA officers for negligence, breach of contract, defamation, fraud, torturous interference with contract, and torturous interference with prospective contract, wrote Self lawyer Scott Temsett. Both words, to be sure, bold words, to be sure, but they bluster and blovation are a serious counterattack against the NCAA and a voluntary organization that sets the rules that all its members must follow. One thing is for sure, the 57-year-old Self, one of the top coaches in the game, is in dire straits vis-a-vis of the NCAA. Kansas faces 5 level 1 violations of NCAA rules, while Self was cited for not properly managing his program. The improper management rule was put in place so college coaches can no longer employ the Sergeant Sulch defense. I know nothing, and avoid responsibility for wrongdoing by their assistants. The case against Candace grew out of a lengthy federal investigation that resulted in numerous criminal indictments in 2017 against a handful of college assistant coaches, would-be athletic agents, and shoe company representatives who included high-profile high school players to attend certain universities with large cash payments. At the time, NCAA officials vowed to follow up alleged violations by a number of schools with their own probes. Kansas, Arizona, USC, Oklahoma State, and Auburn, to name just a few. A couple of weeks ago, the NCAA hit Oklahoma State with a variety of sanctions, including a postseason tournament ban. Now, officials at the other schools are starting to sweat out possible sanctions against them. Self, obviously, is worried that he'll be suspended from coaching, just as former Tennessee coach Bruce Pearl was when he was caught in the NCAA's net. After serving his suspension, Pearl was hired by Auburn, where he is again in NCAA trouble. Self's lawsuit reflects that concern, but Urbana lawyer Steve Beckett, who's been involved in multiple scraps with the NCAA, called the former UI coach's lawsuit a non-starter because Self's relationship with the NCAA is completely voluntary. He predicted that if Self files a lawsuit, the NCAA will immediately file a notion to dismiss that site's Self's pledge to submit to NCAA oversight. The courts are a tough place to go to litigate sports fights, he said. The NCAA charges against KU allege that it worked with Adidas representatives to identify and attract high-profile recruits. Under the arrangement, Adidas would steer great players to KU, a corporate client. In return, the company would have the inside track on signing players to post-university shoe endorsement contracts if they became stars. The NCAA alleges that, in KU's case, Adidas representative TJ Gasnola acted as a KU booster when he gave large sums of money to the families of Jayhawks, recruiting targets so they would commit to KU. KU counters that Gasanola was an Adidas employee, not a KU employee, and that it was not aware of and not responsible for and did not control Gasanola's actions. The NCAA had identified three KU players who were improperly recruited by KU/Adidas. Billy Preston, Silvio D'Souza, and Cheek Diallo. In the self letter, his lawyer writes that his client is no different than any other college coaches in working with shoe company representatives to identify and recruit top talent. The lawyer quotes Notre Dame head coach Mike Bray as saying that every one of us works the shoe company angle, noting that shoe companies that sponsor travel teams routinely identify talent and recommend players to coaches. They're helping, absolutely, Bray said of the companies. But Bray also acknowledged that if there's money changing hands, then yeah, they're a booster. KU already has fired athletic director Shane Xenger as a consequence of the probe. But the school would hate to lose Self, whose teams since 2003 have won 15 Big 12 conference championships, been to three Final Fours, and won the national title. Urbana Civilian Police Review Board. Meetings increased, notarization requirement dropped. By Ben Zitterman. Urbana. In an effort to be more responsive, Urbana Civilian Police Review Board agreed Wednesday to meet at least monthly instead of quarterly and to drop notarization requirements for police complaints. Because the board is also updating its new member orientation, it is waiting to vote on agenda items until members reorient themselves. I want to acknowledge that the CPRB is not lived up to community expectations. Chairman Mika Libunsky said, "There's a lot of work ahead of us, and I think it's going to take multiple meetings." He expressed frustration with how the board operates and interacts with city staff. "It seems like there's a lot of passing of the buck, and I want it to stop," Lebansky said. A longtime member, Scott Dossett, said the board has not received sufficient administrative support from city staff. If you look at a lot of things we're going to continue to talk about in terms of reviewing the complaint process, it gets down to having adequate staff support for this board to be able to do its job," he said. City Administrator Carl Mitten acknowledged this and pledged to provide the board the support it needs. "I understand that there have been lapses in the past, and we're not going to be perfect," Mitten said. "But I'm personally here to join this effort to get the CPRB on a good footing, both with the existing ordinance and to help guide the process to make changes, to make this more responsive to the community." In addition to meeting monthly, Lebansky said that in the near future, he would call special meetings every other week. The board also was generally in support of dropping the notarization requirement, which isn't in the city ordinance, in favor of a notice letting complaints know the consequences of lying a sworn statement. "It adds nothing to the complaint itself, and may indeed present a barrier to some people going out and finding a notary and getting it notarized," board member Daryl Price said. "That's an artificial barrier that we need to remove at this time." Board members also spoke in support of making it easier to fill out the complaint form and submit it, and for the city to provide translation verifications versions of the form. And the board generally agreed Wednesday to set up a subcommittee to review all police complaints, rather than just appeals. We agree that there should be a group of us reviewing all complaints as they come, board member Ricardo Diaz said. At recent city council meetings, residents have called for a more responsive police review board, which city staff said hasn't filled an annual report on police complaints since 2014. And Lubansky said earlier this month that because the board only reviews complaints that have been appealed since 2011, only 4 complaints have been appealed and reviewed by the board. Piatt County jury trials make a temporary move to spacious Monticello Middle School cafeteria by Steve Hoffman. Monticello. Beginning July 5th, the Monticello Middle School cafeteria will be open for the first time since mid-March. But instead of dishing out food, justice will be served. The middle school, built a century after the 1903 Piatt County Courthouse, has the larger spaces that make it much easier to adapt to the COVID-19 related guidelines issued recently by the Illinois Supreme Court. The Monticello Middle School was selected because the building is readily available during the Piatt County July trial setting, mainly due to no school during the summer months, Piatt State's attorney Dana Rose said. The school district recently conducted a social distancing high school graduation, and I was aware that there was the capacity to maintain sufficient social distancing for jury trial purposes. There are currently 5 cases slated for the 2-week jury trial window. School Superintendent Vic Zimmerman, who has been known to be in the gallery for past trials, is all in. "I'm excited about it. I think it'll be great," he said, noting that the middle school office is closed in July anyway. "They're going to use the commons area and the stage, so the judge will be up on the stage with the court reporter, and then the jury will be down on one side, social distance, 6 feet apart, and the attorneys on the other side," Zimmerman said. "They'll have room for visitors and observers. The social distancing would be difficult in traditional courtrooms, which feature fixed seating for the jury, visitors, judge, and witness box. The Piatt County Courthouse is small and not easily adaptable to the social distancing guidelines," said Rhodes, noting that matters of jurisprudence have already been canceled for 2 months during the coronavirus pandemic. Piatt County presiding Judge Hugh Finson and Judge Jeremoni Ritchie have requested that I secure a location for the July trial section that would comply with the Illinois Supreme Court guidelines. There will also be private jury quarters, a defense counsel room, and prosecution quarters and witness rooms available. Rhodes said the school district also offered to set up the seating, tables, and necessary IT hookups for court to be held in the middle school. "I am definitely looking forward to a different venue," Rhodes said. "We all sharpen our skills by getting outside of our comfort zones and presenting evidence in different venue. The Piatt County Sheriff's Department will be in charge of security, just as it is at the courthouse." Ying Ying Zhang Estate. Suit against UI social workers dismissed again. Urbana. For the second time, a judge has dismissed the lawsuit filed by the estate of Yingying Zhang against two social workers at the University of Illinois Counseling Center. After a judge dismissed in December a similar federal lawsuit, it was refiled in January in state court, and the UI again moved to have it dismissed. The family of the slain visiting Chinese scholar has argued that the social workers should have done more when Brent Christensen, who was later convicted of murdering Ms. Zhang, told them 3 months before her death about his fascination with serial killers and that he'd purchased and returned items to move and dispose of a body. What happened to Zhang is inconceivable, Judge Jason Bohm wrote Wednesday. But Thomas Miebach and Jennifer Maupin cannot be said to have caused or in any legal sense contributed to her death. He said that social workers only owe a duty of care to their patients, not third parties. And he concluded that what Christensen told the social workers wasn't a specific threat. To be sure, Christensen made disturbingly ugly comments to Miebach and Maupin, Bohm wrote. However, the law cannot impose upon mental health professionals a duty to break their parents' confidence simply because what their patient reveals is revolting. Instead, there must be a specific threat. Christensen's analytical thinking about murder does not qualify as such. Bohm also said that while Christensen's statements to the social workers were deeply troubling, they weren't made towards a reasonably identifiable victim. There was nothing in Christensen's comments that could allow anyone in March to reasonably identify Zhang as his victim, Bohm wrote. He said that when Christensen met with the social workers in March 2017, only with surmise or conjecture could one conclude that the treatment provided by Miebach and Maupin was a substantial factor in Zhang's death. We continue to grieve with Ms. Zhang's family and loved ones over her death, and we stand by our social workers, their professionalism, and their commitment to the health and safety of our students, UI spokeswoman Robin Culler said. The original federal lawsuit was filed last June, just before Christensen's criminal trial was set to begin. After a lengthy trial, he was found guilty of the June 2017 kidnapping and killing of Ms. Zhang and sentenced to life in prison. While a UI graduate student, he had visited the counseling center on March 21, 2017, after previously being treated for depression and sleep issues at the McKinley Health Center. He told an intern at the counseling center that he had thoughts of committing a murder, according to the intern notes, which went on to say. He explained that he had taken steps to put a plan in place by purchasing some items, but had returned them. The intern requested that Christensen get a consult, which someone else, and Christensen returned to the counseling center 9 days later. On March 30th, 2017, he met with Maupin and Miebach, the counselors named in the lawsuit, who both testified during his trial. Christensen talked about murder in an analytical fashion as a fantasy of his, Miebach said. But when asked if he might act on those fantasies, Christensen said that he wouldn't. When asked specifically if he had a particular target in mind, Christensen said he didn't, Miebach testified. Christensen was scheduled for another appointment with Miebach in early April, and also was referred to Rosenkrantz, a substance abuse faculty in Champaign that has psychiatrists available. He apparently never went to Rosenkrantz, but may have showed up for his next appointment at the counseling center. In their original lawsuit, Ms. Zhang's family argued that the social workers negligently encouraged Christensen by not doing more to discourage his homicidal thoughts, such as by placing him in immediate and long-term care. Ask the Admin, a daily question for Champaign-Urbana Public Health District's Julie Pride. Urbana. A Danville man who entered a Rantoul home in December while under the influence and stabbed a man after following the man's teenager home has been sentenced to a 10 years in prison. If you attack in their home, your next home is the Department of Corrections, Judge Heidi Ladd told Willie Barfield. The 24-year-old pleaded guilty in September to the home invasion, admitting that on December 15th, he forced his way into a home on Juniper Drive and stabbed a resident in the shoulder. That bizarre behavior came after he approached a teen boy who was outside playing with friends. Barfield had a knife in his hand and made incoherent comments, sending the frightened child inside where his mother and stepfather were. Moments later, Barfield kicked in the door and got into a struggle with the 39-year-old stepfather, cutting the man's shoulder with a folding knife. Barfield's sentencing was delayed because of the courthouse shutdown during the coronavirus pandemic. Assistant State's Attorney Christian Afferink agreed to cap her sentencing for recommendation of Barfield at 10 years, even though he faced up to 30. She also agreed to dismiss another count of aggravated battery into a police officer. Barfield had been charged with biting the leg of Sergeant at the county jail, who, with three other police officers, was trying to get the uncooperative Barfield into the jail from Rantoul's squad car. Afferink told Ladd that Barfield's criminal history went back to 2006, when he was first adjuncted with the delinquent minor for aggravated battery. She said that he had four previous convictions as a minor and as an adult for aggravated battery and was on parole for that crime when he committed the home invasion. He's been using drugs most of his life and has an anger problem, Afferink said. Public defender Jane Miller-Jones asked for the minimum 6-year prison sentence, saying that Barfield has had behavioral issues before his father died when he was only 7, and he started abusing alcohol and drugs at age 10. She noted that he had heroin on him when arrested, and that he needs help for substance abuse. Although they were not present, Barfield apologized to the family he harmed and said he intended to take this time to really get myself straight. He was given credit on a sentence for 193 days already served. And that article was Danville Man Receives 10 Years. This has been Samuel Larson with the News Gazette, June 25th, 2020. I look forward to reading with you again soon.